3. The Report. Modo clung to the edge of the sill and swung himself up, cursing his luck. He had come away with little more than a handful of papers, which would irk Mr. Socrates. It had taken a fortnight to plan and rehearse the assignment, and only a minute to botch it. It was 5 stories to the street below. People were staring up, mouths agape, to see where the broken glass had fallen from. He swung over to another balcony, landed on both feet, and ran across the balustrade. The pedestrians were getting a show that rivaled anything playing at Astley's Theatre Royal. As he jumped and grabbed an awning and swung onto the roof, it occurred to him that the theft would be in the papers. Another mistake. The embassy would never report exactly what was missing, but Mr. Socrates was displeased whenever an agent caused enough stir to make the news. Blast it! Modo bounded across to the next building, and over a slanted roof, frightening pigeons. It brought him such joy to leap and dash over London's roofs. It had taken years of training under the watchful eye of Tharper, his martial arts instructor, to make every step so sure to perfect his balance. The 6 months he had spent practically living on London's rooftops had served to heighten his skill. He could get all the way to Buckingham Palace and back before a cab could complete half the trip. What other 14-year-old could do that? Today he only needed to go a few blocks. He hopped onto the roof of Harrod's grocer and lowered himself onto a balcony, unseen by the people on Brompton Road. After removing his jacket, Modo examined the scratches and bite marks on his arm. Not too deep, and the bleeding had stopped. He'd had bad luck before with dogs. They didn't seem to be fooled by his disguises. No surprise, since they relied on their sense of smell. He'd treat the wounds once he was back at Victor House. He turned his suit jacket inside out and pulled it back on. And now, he whispered to himself, to become someone else. He drew in a deep breath, gritted his teeth, leaned against the building, and concentrated, picturing his face shifting into one he called Mr. Dawkins, his young lord with dimples face. His bones ached, his muscles burned, and he sweated as his eyes grew larger, shifting from the squinty, tiny eyes of Simeon, who was at this point lying in an opium den. With the creaking, cracking of bones moving and enlarging, Modo's jaw grew longer, his nose wider. He ensured that his hated hump remained flattened on his back. He'd been able to change his appearance since infancy. He'd trained for years to develop this adaptive transformation under the watchful eyes of Mr. Socrates, but it still took intense concentration. And it hurt. Oh, how the shifting hurt. He grimaced and grunted, hearing Mr. Socrates' voice. You must perfect each face. No drooping eyelids or sagging cheeks. No sign of your true ugliness. Perfect it, Modo. He didn't stop until every last bone was in place. He looked at least 25 years old now. He yanked off the sideburns, then took out a handkerchief and dabbed the sweat from his forehead. He didn't transform the rest of his body. If he did, his clothes would no longer fit. He had stashed a long, dark coat here. He pulled it from behind a chair and threw it around his shoulders. The final touch was a collapsible top hat. With the press of a button, it popped from flat as a fritter to full height. Modo placed the hat on his head, then climbed through the window and into an unoccupied room. In the next room he surprised a seamstress, who looked up from her work. "Oh, dear," she gasped. "My apologies." Modo gave her a sweeping bow. He made his way to the ground floor, stopping only to buy a jar of gooseberry preserves. He sampled them as he walked along the street. He could easily have travelled by rooftop, but he would be far too sweaty by the time he arrived at Victor House. Mr. Socrates wouldn't approve of that. Modo had spent the past 2 days in the embassy, serving food and speaking little, as his French was only passable. Much of the time he pretended to be sick. He especially avoided the other servants, as they would likely have become suspicious. The ambassador and secretaries and commissaries hardly gave him a look because he was only a servant, which made his task easier. He had assumed the ambassador was out of his office and intended to break into the safe. A nasty surprise to find Letourneau there. Mr. Socrates would not be happy with his poor planning. Feeling bolder, Modo walked back down Brompton Road and Knightsbridge, past the embassy on the opposite side of the street. He glanced at the broken window on the top floor and snickered when he saw the gendarme running back and forth along the street. London policemen were trying to gain entry to the embassy, but they were being barred by gendarmes. Carriages and an omnibus rattled past. Then he heard barking and saw the two wolfhounds being led by Marcus, both straining at their leashes and glaring right at him. Modo nearly choked on a gooseberry. He cursed himself for being too arrogant and quickened his pace. He passed the Gorkas and turned down the next street to hail a hansom cab. After 20 minutes of being jostled about, he was deposited in front of Victor House. Modo didn't know whether Mr. Socrates owned the grand mansion himself, or if it was a possession of the Permanent Association, the secretive British group that managed agents all over the world. The association had formed to protect Britannia from outside enemies. That was Modo's best guess, at least. Mr. Socrates was typically tight-lipped when it came to explaining the association's goals. Modo mentally listed the estates of which he knew, Tower House, Ravenscroft, Victor House, but he imagined there were many more. The association was, no doubt, rich beyond his wildest calculations. Right next to the iron front gate was a statue of Mars, the god of war, standing with a lance in one hand, a shield in the other. Modo rubbed the shield for luck. Mr. Socrates would frown upon such superstition. At the front door, Modo knocked. It opened and Tharpa smiled, his teeth made brighter by his dark skin. Modo resisted the urge to hug his combat instructor. He hadn't done that since he was a child. "I recognize this face, young Saab," Tharpa said. "One day I'll arrive with a face you've never seen." "I will know you by your smell, Modo," Tharpa laughed. "Please come in." Modo stepped into the front hall. "It's so good to see you, Tharpa. You'd be proud of how far I jumped, running along balustrades and swinging over flagpoles. Everything you taught me." "Yes, as I have always said, young Saab is part monkey." Tharpa took Modo's coat sleeve and gently lifted his wrist. "Wounded again?" He rolled back the sleeve and looked over the scratches on Modo's arm. "Ah, always you are in trouble with dogs. Come to me when you are finished with your report. Mr. Socrates awaits you in the study." Tharpa entered the study before Modo and announced, "Young Modo is here." Then he withdrew. Modo strode into the circular study, trying to look confident. Mr. Socrates was seated at a table in his red satin smoking jacket, pipe burning, glasses on his nose. His white hair had been cut so short it stuck straight out. For nearly 14 years, this man had been the closest thing Modo had had to a father. Every lesson, all the minutiae of Modo's education had been planned by Mr. Socrates. Now his sharp eyes measured Modo, who felt as though his master's gaze was sizing up his deficiencies. Modo adjusted a button on his coat, wondering how old Mr. Socrates was. 55? 70? 100? Mr. Socrates lowered his glasses. "Welcome, Modo. Do have a seat," he said. Modo chose a chair next to the wall of books. It squeaked. The table in front of him was spread with documents and maps, lit by light from the nearby window. "Please give me your report." "Well, I began, as you suggested, by acting somewhat ill and surly so that others at the embassy would not suspect my disguise. I did my duties as a servant, but retreated to my room, feigning illness. When my features began to shift back to their usual state, the results, Modo. What happened, and what did you bring me?" Modo recounted his last few minutes at the French embassy, and produced the two papers he had stolen. "This is all," Mr. Socrates said. "I didn't expect him to be in his study." "Well, perhaps you should have carried on with your disguise." "I don't believe I could have, sir. Some of the staff were becoming suspicious, and once Consul Letourneau believed I was sick, I felt it would be some time before he would allow me back in his quarters." Mr. Socrates nodded. "Yes, your line of reasoning is acceptable." "Good." Modo breathed deeply. That was as close as Mr. Socrates ever came to giving a compliment. As Mr. Socrates examined the documents, Modo eyed the book spines beside him. Intravascular Medicine. A History of Espionage. Britons and Britannia. Outside the window, the midday sun shone down on the garden of Victor House. It being November, there were no flowers, but the vines and leaves were still quite green. "Well, this is something, at least," Mr. Socrates said, holding up a sheet of paper. "I wouldn't call your mission an unqualified success, but I can work with this." "I'm pleased to hear that, sir." Modo leaned in to look at the documents, written in French, bearing the embassy stamp. Perhaps later Mr. Socrates would trust him enough to explain what they meant. "I'm done with you now," Mr. Socrates said. "I imagine you're hungry. French pastries may taste like they are prepared by angels, but I find they never fill the stomach. Please go to the kitchen. If cook is there, he will look after you. If not, help yourself. But the Roquefort is mine." He laughed. Reluctantly, Modo stood. When he got to the door, Mr. Socrates cleared his throat. "One more thing, Modo." Modo turned back. "Yes, sir?" "Your true features are beginning to show. Please let them. You don't have to retain that form in front of me. I know what you really look like."
"Yes, sir."
Modo plodded down the hall, undoing his cravat. How he hated his natural state. With each step he let his body unfold. His hump grew, his back curved, his eyes widened and skewed, his nose flattened. By the time he opened the kitchen door, his hand was gnarled. He went over to the tin waste basket and ran his hand through his dark hair, watching it fall out in clumps. Soon all that remained were the red tufts of his natural hair. His suit was too small now, so he undid a few buttons. He rubbed his head and thought of Octavia. Just picturing her pale, perfect face made his heart race. A little more than 2 months ago, she had knocked at the door of his ancient room at the Red Boar, pretending to be someone else, and sent him on his first major assignment. Together they had explored sewers, faced the mechanical hounds created by the infamous Dr. Hyde, and stopped a giant machine that threatened the Houses of Parliament. She had pulled him, half-drowned, from the Thames. He would always owe her his life. In the intense days of that assignment, he'd grown close to her. Because they were risking their lives together? Or was it something more? He'd seen her only once more since then, on the balcony overlooking Kew Gardens, where he'd spent his mornings recuperating. She had asked to see his true face, and he had refused. It wasn't a face for beautiful eyes to look upon. He wondered if she'd felt betrayed. She was the only fellow agent he knew, and he considered her a friend. But there would be no point in asking the ever-secretive Mr. Socrates about Octavia. He never shared information about other agents. "This will heal your wounds," Tharpa said from behind him, making Modo jump. Zounds! Even after years of training at Tharpa's side, learning to slow his heart rate, to hear every twitch or creak of wood, his teacher could still sneak up on him. Tharpa was holding a bottle and a jar of salve. Modo pulled back his sleeve and held out his arm for Tharpa to splash the wounds with alcohol. It burned, but then Tharpa applied the cool green salve. "When will I learn to walk as silently as you?" Modo asked. "When you learn to become the air itself." Modo lifted an eyebrow, and Tharpa laughed. "It sounded very wise, did it not?" Modo heard footsteps, and a moment later Mr. Socrates entered the kitchen. "Ah, good, Modo." He put his hand on Modo's shoulder, and Modo felt the warmth of his touch. It was so rare for Mr. Socrates to display affection. This is what a father would do, Modo thought, place his hand on his son's shoulder. "I have transcribed what I can. After you eat, I want you to return to your room at the Langham. You're finished with this assignment."